the world's most insane internet radio talk show. This is Injustice Radio, presented by MofoBooks.com. I am your host, author, and fair trial advocate, Lucas Stidham. We are broadcasting live from Concord, North Carolina, where it is just to challenge that which is unfair. America, this is your show.
All right, welcome to the show. I am Luther Stidham, your host. This is Injustice Radio. We're going to jump right in here. We've got a pretty exciting show scheduled for you today. I'm going to open up the lines here shortly. When I do, the phone number is 704-707-4670. That's 704-707-4670. I want to welcome our guest speaker right now, Mr. Jason. Jason, just go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is we're here to talk about today.
Of course, Luther. My name's Jason. I kind of a side-stepping conspiracy theorist, degree holder in business and criminal justice. Work for a nice corporation, but on the side, dip and dabble in a little bit of conspiracy theories. So we're going to talk about some of the issues that are out there facing America today. We're going to talk about some of the things that we don't want to talk about, some wedge issues, race, religion, and that kind of stuff, and how we take where we are as a country to where we want to be as a country.
Gotcha. Real quick, also, if you have not had the opportunity to pick up a copy of my book, I advise you to do so. I've got an upcoming show where I'm going to play some audio for you that I talk about in the book, as well as some recorded phone calls that I think you're going to find pretty interesting to hear. There's a particular part in the back of the book where a particular someone by the name of Judge Olamay Lewis is blocking my appeal. So if you'll visit my website, mofobooks.com, that's MOFObooks.com, click on the link that says Sign Luther's Petition, and then you will actually be able to hear that audio that I refer to. So, Mr. Jason, man, it's been an honor to meet you, know you, and become a friend of yours.
The same.
So, let's just dive right in, man. Go ahead. It's all yours. I'm going to turn it over to you. I'll jump in here and there when I need to, but tell me what's on your mind, man. Talk to me.
I hear you. Well, first, let me go ahead and say that if you haven't been to Mofo Books, if you haven't checked out Luther's book, I've had the pleasure of doing so. I bought a copy, read it while I was on vacation, in between ferry rides across the Irish Sea and coaches across Scotland, and really dove into it. Instead of looking at scenery that I've never seen, I was sitting there wrapped up in a book. But it was a pleasure. It's a great book. I joined with you in getting your name cleared and really raising funds for the defense fund and getting you cleared and back to where you want to be. Like I said, it's a great book. Everybody go check it out. Sign the petition online. I have already. And let's get this innocent man free.
Man, I do appreciate that. I just dawned on me why in the world I did not send you with a handful of books to across the sea like that. I don't know why I didn't think of that, but I should have just given you 6 or 8 or 12, and you just dump them off.
You should have made them count. You know, I didn't think about it either. I didn't know where I was going to read it. With work and everything else, sometimes we get wrapped up and not getting a lot of free time. But I had a ton of it over there during our travels. And speaking of overseas, I want to give a special shout out to a couple of friends of mine who are listening all the way in the UK. So Phil and Gary, if you're out there, enjoy the show. I hope to make you guys proud, and keep the struggle and keep the fight alive out there. It's some parts in Northern Ireland are still fighting, battles that have been going on for years, and it's about time to get rid of the BS in government that they face as well as we do here in America.
Wow, that's great. So, and what was their name again? Say it again.
Phil and Gary.
Phil and Gary. Hi, Phil and Gary. This is Injustice Radio. My name's Luther Stidham. Wow, thanks for joining us all the way from across the sea like that. That's wonderful. That's great. And again, like he was saying, like Jason was saying, this is important. You know, this is not just something for me. It's you're helping a lot of other people as well, family, you know, friends, to go sign my petition. This is really important. For every book that gets purchased, a portion of the proceeds will go to buy more books, and then the remainder gets deposited into a defense fund.
Yeah, and every time I say MoFo Books, Luther gives me a dollar. So MoFo Books, MoFo Books.
All right. Now you're up to about $5 so far. So
all right,
keep the budget under $20.
There we go.
All right. Shoot, man. Go for it.
Man, there's so many topics we can talk about, Luther, and you know, so many problems facing America today as a nation. And I mean, we start from the top down, just like in every corporation, and we have a president that still has so much conspiracy surrounding him. You know, I doing research for this show, when we first talked about it, it was a pleasure for me to think about being on this show, simply because of the fact that it's kind of rebel radio.
Yeah, it is.
That's kind of what I told you before. It's a voice for the people, you know. There's the Alex Jones, there's the Rush Limbaughs, you know, and everybody talks about Rush and listens to Rush, and millions of viewers, millions of listeners, makes millions of dollars a year. What's his credentials? You know, I mean, does he have political science degrees? Is he an economist? Is he a financial advisor? What I mean, is he a political science major? No, he has a degree from, you know, the CBS School of Broadcasting and a big mouth.
Right.
You know? Now, I mean, he has a lot of things to say, I think, on one
by the way,
spectrum.
By the way, that is Jason at InjusticeRadio.com.
Exactly. No. And it's funny. I have a friend of mine who happens to be black, and he says he listens to Rush every day. And I'm like, what? You know, you listen to Rush every day? And he's like, yeah, I like to get both sides of the spectrum. So I'm going to hope to give kind of both sides of the spectrum and not sit here and bash a certain group of people or a certain political affiliation. But if I asked you, Luther, if I asked you the question about Obama, if I asked you the question of is this gentleman, is he part of the problem or part of the solution? What do you think you would say?
Honestly, my answer is I don't know. I don't know whether he's part of the problem or part of the solution. I have heard, I and my show try to stay neutral.
Yeah.
And when I feel strongly about something, trust me, I can get loud.
Yeah.
And I can boast it. And I don't care whose feelings I hurt.
Yeah.
But as far as Obama goes, I honestly do not know. I don't know whether to lean on this side of the fence or that side of the fence, because I've heard good and bad from both areas.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the things are taken out of context. You know, we use excerpts of anything and try to twist it, you know, to our own way of thinking. I mean, we can take quotes from the Bible. We can take quotes from the Quran. We can take quotes from his own book, you know, where he denounced the white side of his family. But if we take it back into consideration of the whole context of the paragraph, whole context of the chapter, we'll see that really a person in his childhood was fighting for identity, you know, fighting for, you know, a sense of purpose and a sense of himself.
Okay.
And it's funny, you know, you do a bunch of research on Obama. You look at timelines of his birth. People talk about his birth certificate, or where was he born? Where did he grow up? And you see trips to Kenya, or spending time in Kenya, raised in Kansas, raised by his grandma. You know, there's so many things out there. So really the biggest thing about conspiracies in general is you got to get out there and seek the truth for yourself. You know, I mean, anybody can judge, you know, sitting back.
Right.
But you really have to get in there and do the research. But he was born in 1961. He was born to a Caucasian female and a Kenyan student, born and raised in Kenya. And then from there, it's really a lot of, you know, hearsay. I mean, when did he go back? How much time did he spend in Chicago? You know, going to college in Los Angeles. But I really want to touch on it just real quick, I mean, because we've got so many other things to get to, but to kind of paint you the picture of where we are now and who this is, who this man is leading our country. But you see a product of a mixed household, a product of complete opposite ends of the spectrum being a, you know, a white woman who he says, you know, not really the most moral of people. As a 13-year-old, he denounced, you know, that part of his family, even though his Caucasian grandmother did a lot of the raising, supposedly, here in the States.
Wow, okay. This is Obama.
This is Obama, yeah.
Wow.
So, whose father was not in his life, you know, a Kenyan student, an exchange student, a foreign exchange student. And so he grows up, you know, without this sense of who he is. He goes to college. He's hanging with every single abstract group there is out there. He's hanging with the Marxist professors. He's hanging with the socialists. He's hanging with Latino organizations. And there's nothing wrong as far as that, as far as, you know, one race of people or another. But he's still seeking a purpose, still
right.
trying to find himself. You
right,
know?
Okay.
So we got that going on, you know, in college. You know, he was getting into politics. And you think of somebody who's hanging around a certain group of people, whether it be, you know, one viewpoint or another, and really taking to Marxist professors. I mean, where do you think he's going to come out with as far as when he gets into politics? You know, he's going to have a lot of those viewpoints, especially if that's all you're hanging around. So comes out of college, gets into politics, meets a gentleman by the name of Bill Ayers. William Ayers. Have you heard the name before? You know anything about the gentleman?
I'm not familiar with that name, no.
Okay. You know, Bill Ayers is a renowned scholar, professor, published author, has all the credentials. But also what we don't know, you know, it's out there if you want to do the research, but is a member of the Weather Underground organization. And I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it...
No. But that sounds like a something like a meteorology school on the ground or something
exactly.
to me.
Exactly. Yeah, when you first hear it, it doesn't sound bad. The Weather
right.
Underground Organization, that actually sounds pretty cool. So it's a club for meteorologists. There you go. But, so, you know, he's a, like I said, he's a professor. Far left-wing guy. You're talking about the Weather Underground Organization actually... was believed to be the producers and people who attacked the U.S. Capitol in 1971.
Okay.
Bombed the U.S. Capitol. A bomb went off. And they were protesting the U.S. invasion of Laos. So it's kind of a radicalist, anti-government, anti-establishment group. So, you know, they're accused of that. They're accused of bombing the Pentagon in 1972. For the U.S. bombing in Hanoi. So we're bombing in retaliation of the U.S. bombing in another country.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense, right?
Right.
You know, that's the right way to
oh,
do it.
Oh, yeah, two wrongs make a right. You should know that.
Exactly. Well, you know, in our line of work, that's always what works. So, and they also bombed the U.S. Department of State in 1975 for the escalation in Vietnam. You know, which was very, you know, before me, but very, you know, there was so many people on one side of the fence or another in Vietnam. You know, a war that a lot of people thought we shouldn't be there. A war where many U.S. troops died, and they're sitting here bombing our buildings of government in retaliation for that. And also the same group who attacked the World Trade Center for the first time in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So... we have a gentleman who saw this up-and-coming Obama, who is a very smart individual. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, talks about, you know, did he go to college or, you know, how much he was in college and all that good stuff, and that'll be for another time. But they see this up-and-comer, this biracial individual who's well-spoken, great orator, unlike myself, but is a great speaker, and... you know, Marxist. I mean, he's high strung and he's, you know, he's in the right crowds and he's in the abstract crowds. And Bill Ayers and his group actually started his political campaign for senator, you know,
okay.
in Illinois.
Right. Wow.
So they basically kind of talked him in to running in a time period where a well spoken biracial male was kind of unique. You know, so they jumped on him, put a lot of money into his campaign. He ended up winning a campaign, got him recorded in the Senate for, you know, voting less than half of you know, for half of the topics that he could have voted on while in office. So really, it's a complete story of, you know, a question about identifying himself or trying to identify himself.
Right, right.
You know, trying to find a place to belong.
Which and I think a lot of us in that early part of our, you know, years are trying to find, or at least we struggle with in our teenage years. I don't know about, you know, his age at that time. But Listen, Jason, we're going to take a commercial real quick, and we'll come back. We're going to pick back up with Jason and his very interesting story he has to share with us.
Suppose you were accused of a crime you did not commit. Now, how far would you go to prove you're innocent? Hi, my name's Luther Stidham. Want to help me right the wrong? Just pick up a copy of my book, Falsely Accused, Forever Branded, at your favorite bookstore or on Amazon. Or better yet, make a donation of any amount at mofobooks.com. That's M-O-F-O-books.com.
All right, welcome back to the show. This is Injustice Radio. I'm your host, Luther Stidham. And if you have not visited the website lately, visit mofobooks.com, M-O-F-O-books.com. Make sure you pick up a copy of the book that does have definite meaning and purpose to the book. Visit the website again and check. You're going to see a little icon in there that says click to sign Luther's petition, something like that. Anyway, go click on the petition, sign it. It's very important. I need about 100 signatures, and then I'm going to start, this game's going to start. I'm going to print out the petition. I'm going to print out maybe 100 petitions. I'm going to make 100 copies of the CD that the petition refers to. I'm going to mail them out to the newspapers first, radio, TV stations, and then I'm going to file a grievance with the state bar. Send them a copy, and then the very last copy will be sent to Judge Ola May Lewis, Superior Court Judge of Brunswick County, North Carolina. And my goal is to force her to stop blocking my appeal from reaching the North Carolina Court of Appeals. My case should have been dismissed way back in 2010, 2011, and she's taking this matter personally, and she's blocking everything I do, including today as we speak. I'll share that with you on down the road. I've got some very interesting telephone recordings to share with you, as well as some audio to share of an interview that was they didn't ever think I would get my hands on, but I did, and it involves an FBI agent covering up some very, very bad stuff for somebody. I have him recorded saying it. So let's get back to Jason. I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines. If you want to call in, the number is 704-707-4670. That's 704-707-4670. If you would like to ask myself or Jason a question about today's topic or anything related to the book, feel free to give us a call. All right, Mr. Jason.
I think we could spend a whole show or maybe multiple shows on the what's going on with law enforcement nowadays.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it's talking about conspiracy. I mean, it goes all the way to the top with this stuff. I mean, if
sure
they
does.
Really want to, if they really want to cover something up, you know, they have all the means to do so.
You know, we briefly discussed some reports, I guess you have about prison.
Yeah.
Tell me what you got there. I've done my research on prison population and how it's become prison profiteer. But let's see what you got.
Well, heck, I mean, you also did your research being out there in the street, you know,
yes.
protecting us out there from criminals. And I have a criminal justice degree, so I've done the educational part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted to work homicide, but that was kind of one of my goals. But I went back to school a little bit later in life and decided to use that as a precursor for my business degree. So chose to stay in business. But, you know, it's funny looking at the business aspect of it, and that's where one of these things hit home. And we're talking about the 93-94% of cases that are plea bargained nationwide in America. We're talking about we hold 5% of the world's population, but we hold 25% of the world's inmates.
So, right. That sounds right.
You know, China, we have half the population of China and we have 20% more people in prison than they do. So 25% of the world's inmates, roughly at 2 million. And talking about private prisons, back in 2004, we only had 5 private prisons nationwide, 5. And that's roughly about 2,000 inmates. Do you have any clue where we're at now in 2024, as far as the closing of the year in 2014, where we were at?
You're speaking strictly on private, not state-owned, correct?
Strictly on private.
I have no clue on
that
one.
We're in triple digits now. We're right at 100. Now, that was at the end of the year in 2014. So, and that was roughly 62,000 inmates.
I remember in prison, we watched a documentary about a private prison.
Yes.
But this was for juveniles.
Okay.
And they ended up, the private prisons control when you get released in some of these locations. Yeah. And in this particular place, this judge, who was, I believe, charged and convicted, he was sending all these kids to this juvenile prison over the simplest things. And they were being denied release.
Okay.
Repeatedly, spending more time than they were supposed to in this little juvenile prison, you might say. And finally somebody got the word out. This judge that had been sentencing all these children was disbarred, charged, and they shut the place down. But, that kind of goes along with what you're saying. How many today are still out there that we are not aware about?
Well, I have a coworker who's a detention officer. I won't tell you the county he's in, but he was talking to me about that even a basic individual who comes in after being arrested, that if they stay longer, they get paid per day. The prison gets paid per day on amount of inmates.
Oh, yes, I can verify that. Absolutely.
So when we're talking about, if somebody comes in for a drunk driving or something like that, there's a mandatory, or not a mandatory, but a maximum of 72 hours you can hold somebody, right? That's correct, right? 72 mm-hmm. hours before you actually release them or charge them or whatever you want to do. So this idea of somebody coming in at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday and getting out Saturday morning is probably far-fetched now with the amount of money they can get paid. They'll hold you to Monday morning.
Now, you're just speaking of jail. You're not speaking of prison, right?
Yeah, now that's in jail. Right. Yeah, just the per person. Now, in prison, we're talking about a completely, a lot more money.
Oh, yeah, it's the money involved with the prison. Well, North Carolina, for example, I had a superintendent tell me one time, he said that North Carolina's prison system, this was in 2010, was a $1.25 billion industry.
Wow.
North Carolina taxpayers are fronting this bill.
Yeah.
And so is the federal government.
Yeah.
And the prison itself, now it's Department of Public Safety, and I don't like to say that now because of one organization that's under the Department of Public Safety that I feel still has some integrity about them, and that's the North Carolina State Highway Patrol.
I was going to go there, as far as the Highway Patrol. I know that's what they're listed under now. Yeah.
So anything I say about the DPS now is unrelated to the Highway Patrol. I know several Highway Patrol troopers, and they have more integrity in their little pinky than any other officer I know, judge, prosecutor, combined times 1,000.
Gotcha.
So that does not include, just for the record, Highway Patrol troopers. They are. There may be some smartasses out there, but they got more integrity than anybody I've ever met as far as law enforcement goes. All right, that being said, the Department of Public Safety charges the taxpayer X amount of dollars to operate the prison system for this particular year, right?
Yeah.
And that's also including any food. That also includes the clothing, the medical, et cetera. It all sounds nice and legit.
Yep.
Well, let me break the news to you. It's not. It is a profiteer. It's a profiting organization. For example, the same superintendent told me that I overheard him telling a couple of what we call COs, correctional officers in prison.
Okay.
We call them COs. I overheard him telling them that a particular dorm, and it was my dorm, he just upgraded the tables. These tables cost him $10,000 as a individual prison, Gaston Correctional Center.
For a lot of these tables.
No, sir. For four of these tables.
Four of these tables. Wow.
So that, break the math down there, that's $2,500 for these stainless steel 4-seat tables.
Okay.
And this was while I was doing my research on prison for the follow-up book to the first book, Falsely Accused, Forever Branded. The second one's going to be titled Prison Diaries.
Okay.
And that was some of my research. So I'm constantly searching for guys who make these tables, because guess who makes the tables? The inmates.
Ah.
The inmates are the ones who make the tables.
At the same prison, no less.
No, not at this prison. They do one, I think it's at Brown Creek. They have a welding school out there. It's a little organization called Correctional Enterprise.
Yeah.
Wow, you know.
So these prisoners are obviously getting paid a lot of money to get these tables, right?
They're paid $1 a day. Some are paid 70 cents a day.
Yeah.
Some are paid $3 a day. The master welders, I guess is what I'm going to call them, make about $3 a day.
Gotcha.
And they're working, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day. And before I go any further than that, I don't have anything against an inmate working.
Yeah.
I don't have anything against an inmate making a very small wage.
Which,
because the taxpayer is paying basically for his room and board. So I don't have nothing against that.
Would you say that it would actually kind of help them when they get out learning a trait like that? So
absolutely.
They're not going to the same things that got them there in the first place?
Absolutely. There's not a thing wrong, nothing wrong with that.
I support that.
And there also needs to be a lot more rehabilitation that in 2012 the state took away from the prison. So kind of now it's you're on your own type of thing.
Besides just working out.
Besides just, you know, lifting weight like I done, you know.
Yeah.
That's all I had. I was in class, you know. I made things for myself to do, and I was taking some courses.
Okay.
And then the state pulled the funding and just kind of said, sorry, so sad.
Yeah.
But that's what's going on in prison right now. And now these take back to the table. So I actually find somebody in the prison, my prison, that was the welder. He made these tables. So I sat down with my little notepad and I said, okay, how much does this material cost? And he said, from what he understood, it only cost about $300 or $400 in metal. And then he explained why. It was because the state gets contracts through manual metal companies to furnish so much metal to them. And then they buy it at the lowest possible price that they can.
Okay.
And then now you have an inmate. Let's say he spends a week building this one table. So let's make it fair. Let's say the state has $400 in material.
Okay.
They've paid this inmate top dollar. Let's even say he makes $5 a day. He works 5 days a week.
Okay.
So now they got $425 in this table.
Okay.
The Correctional Enterprise, which is a little spinoff of the North Carolina Department of Public Safety, the prison system, then charges the prison system X amount of dollars for that table at a profit. The prison system now turns around and says, all right, that table, I'm going to sell that table to, you got to understand where I'm going here, the mothership here, prison system, Department of Public Safety, says, I'm going to sell that table to Gaston Correctional Center for $2,500.
Understood.
All right, so that $2,500 now is in that prison's budget, right?
Mm-hmm.
The taxpayer is then passed on that bill. So here's how it goes quickly. The taxpayer pays $2,500 for a table that the prison has already charged itself for at a profit, and then turns right around and sells it to the individual institutes or correctional individual places like Gaston Correctional Center, where I was at a profit. So there is a tremendous amount of profit being made off of these tables, and there should be no profit made off of these tables because the taxpayer is paying for the table.
Bill.
So why are we paying $2,500 for these tables when we know that, we'll be fair, let's say they have $1,000 in these tables. Why isn't the taxpayer paying the $1,000 for the table versus paying $2,500 and somebody's pocketing
$1,500
worth of profit per table. So now let's say there's a $1,500 profit in table. I'm just using my own numbers now.
And that's one table.
That's one table.
Yep.
Multiply that times four in my dorm.
Yeah.
And they replaced three. They replaced four. Let's see. They did 12 tables in the dorm I was located.
Yeah.
So now multiply that by $1,250. Let's just say. Well, just make it $1,000.
Yeah.
So the math is easy.
Yeah.
The profit that was made is tremendous, and it goes all the way to even the farm where the prison grows their own food, and strawberries. They take them to the farmer's market. They arrange somebody to buy it. It's sold back to the prison system at a tremendous profit, and then the prison turns around and sells it back to the individual institutes and the centers at a profit. See, people don't really know what's going on in prison.
And that's fruit and tables. I mean, we're talking toilets and trays and chairs and God knows what else is in there that's all being...
There are organizations, right. There are organizations like your bread companies, Food Lion, individuals like that, that donate food to the prison, donate bread, however stale it is.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, a lot of that stuff is needed. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But the prison already has been budgeted for the food. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's already been budgeted for the food, so that was money that you didn't have to spend. So where is it?
Yeah.
I was actually told, I cannot prove this, I was told, so technically this is third-party hearsay, by a prison guard at Gaston Correctional Center, that when their budget, when they come in under budget, that prison personnel gets a bonus.
Mm. Well, that would make sense.
Yeah.
That would make sense. It's kind of like, the same thing with group homes, same thing with foster homes. You know, you have these foster homes that, you know, adopt a child. They pay them about $600 a month. And for every child they adopt, they pay them about $600 a month. Now, I mean, some adoption agencies, I just watched one of my real good friends and his wife adopt a child. Lovely child, great great story. But some of these other ones, for-profit foster homes and group homes, so they're paying, you know, the family $600 a month. Now, if you have one, I mean, that, you know, that's probably a reasonable expectation. But what if you're adopting two or three? You know, so you're getting $1,800 a month for three children. I mean, is that really that much extra spaghetti, you know, every couple of nights and stuff like that? So,
right.
I mean, it's all for profit, like you said, and people are benefiting from it instead of and it's definitely not the taxpayer.
Right. You know, North Carolina's prison system, you can publicly trade it. You can buy stocks in it.
Really?
Yes.
Sure, most of the time you find that in corporations there, Luther.
Yeah, well, prison is a corporation.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's a prison. It's definitely a corporation, and you can buy and sell shares.
Well, we talked about, you know, 2014. There's at the end of 2014, there's basically 62,000 inmates in these private prisons. Do you know what they're estimating in 2024? How many inmates will be in a private?
Most likely double that at the rate we're going.
No, far underestimated that one. They're saying about 360,000.
Wow.
Because everybody's catching wind of it. You know, it's a money-making. It's a money-making scam, so.
Well, sure it is, because the federal government even steps in and says, as long as you follow these guidelines, we're going to pay you X amount of dollars for those inmates. And each prison, like if they shipped, when I got shipped from my processing camp, PCI, Piedmont Correctional Institute,
okay,
they received X amount of dollars for me.
Okay.
And then when I went from there to HOC, what we called the, basically it was just a holding yard, they got X amount of dollars for my appearance.
Wow.
And then when I went to Lincoln, they got X amount of dollars for my appearance. And then when I finally settled in Gaston, they got and continued to get X amount of dollars for my appearance. It's something like $28,000. $29,000 is what the public is charged per inmate on an average, because you got minimum custody was where I was at.
Yeah.
So I cost the taxpayers a little less money versus your lifers, and they cost a whole lot more.
High security inmates.
Oh, yeah, high security. They cost a whole lot more. So we had, I think, last I heard, right before I got out, we had 40-some thousand inmates in North Carolina prison. So in rules of fairness, I like to be fair, let's say that the average was only $10,000 per inmate.
Yeah.
Now multiply that times 40,000.
I'm not a math major, Luther, but that's a lot of money. And it's funny that you said that, because I actually have the figures for June 2015 about the average inmate. They're saying is roughly $21,000 to $23,000.
Okay.
With the high security inmate being 33.
Okay.
Roundabout. So
okay.
There you go. Now, what's funny? Do you know the average median salary of the average everyday Joe walking around? Do you know that?
I'm going to guess at that. Let's say the average salary would be, let's say, $18,000, $19,000.
Okay, a little low. We're at $26,945.
Okay, yeah. I mean, you got to give me a break here, man. I was in a can for 4.5 years.
Well, you didn't know there was going to be a pop quiz.
When I come out of prison, when I went in prison, there were no such thing as smartphones. When I come out of prison, I was like a little kid in a candy store, man, trying to figure out these phones and what they would do. So, yeah, just go easy, man.
I will. You didn't know there was going to be a pop quiz, so I forgive you. But, you know, we're talking about the average everyday American, the average hardworking blue-collar man and woman, regardless of color. You're out there, you know, doing your best to support a family or trying to support you and a wife. And the average salary is $26,000, almost $27,000. When some, you know, person sitting in a high-security prison, which, hey, as we've talked about, may or may not be guilty. There's been plenty of cases that have been overturned where somebody's been sitting there for 30 years and has been proven innocent. But for the most part, if we're going to go on statistics, for the most part, they deserve to be there. For the most part.
Yes.
And it's costing the taxpayer $33,000, which, just going off an estimate, probably costs a third of that, actually, to keep them up. I mean, that's just a rough guesstimate for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you'd have more insight than I would on that one. But so it costs more to house an inmate than it is for the average person out there walking around, you know, their salary. So that's sad.
Yeah, it is.
Now, I'm not going to jump on the bandwagon of $15 an hour for somebody to flip in a burger, you know. But in the same sense, I mean, it's a problem and it's an epidemic and it's only going to get worse. It's just one of the things out there that, you know, you don't know until you know.
Right.
So once you do know, do something about it. Vote somebody in there who's actually going to, you know, change the system.
Right.
Unless they're already being preoccupied with the money in their pockets, and then we'll probably get nowhere. So.
Exactly. And there, you know, another one of the biggest concerns were the medical.
Yeah.
I've personally watched a couple people die, literally die in prison due to the lack of medical.
Yeah. But,
and medical the guy passes out, falls, busts his head. He starts bleeding. They lock him up thinking he's on drugs.
Or thinking he did that to maybe get aroused or get attention or something?
Nope, literally just because they thought he was on drugs.
Wow.
And they locked him up, and he was in there for several days. He was telling that he was very sick, very, very sick, and could not get him to take him to the hospital.
Yeah.
Finally, he was released,
okay,
tested, he passed for drugs. So there was your first sign that he had not taken any drugs. So, okay, maybe we should listen to this guy that he lost consciousness, fell, and busted his head. Why did you do that? So let's take him to the hospital and figure out why. But they didn't. They sent him back to work. He worked in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And then there was a guard that worked in the kitchen that stood up for him and said, listen, the guy's sick. He's got these growths on his body. These lumps are coming up everywhere. Take him to the hospital. If you don't, I'm going to go above your head.
Yeah, check him out. Yeah.
So they did. Come to find out, the guy had cancer, had tumor throughout his whole body, and within 2 weeks, he was dead.
Wow. You know, I've heard some stories, having a friend who's a correctional officer in a detention maximum security prison, and you know, you hear a lot of stories, but in the same sense, it's a money thing that, you know, and I'm all about the law enforcement person's safety, you know, and I'm sure that there's a lot of prisons out there where there's not enough correctional officers for inmates. But some of the stuff that you see and you hear about it, it's just ridiculous. And they're not taking care of them. We're paying way too much money. They put people in charge of these inmates who aren't making enough money. It's a scam that just sickens you when you do all the research on it.
Well, here's a problem that I've seen. It's a big problem. And it's when you go to prison, you're, number one, it's, you think there's racism on the street now.
Yeah.
You've seen nothing.
Oh yeah,
the racism is extremely rampant in prison. This Confederate flag thing going on—that's, I laugh at every one of you out there that argue about the flag.
Yeah,
whether you like it or not.
Well, I mean, do some history do some research on the history about it. That's the funny thing is I tell you, I mean, well, I'm black and you're white, and I hate you because you have a Confederate flag. I mean, you're an idiot. You know, do some research on it. I mean, you have just as many blacks as whites, you know, fighting for the historical value of that flag. But I was not prepared to talk about the Confederate flag.
No, I wasn't either. That's not where I was going. That's not where I was going about it. My point was the racism in prison and the inmate, the man and the woman, you know, and more the man than the woman getting released from prison. So you're in this, they're in this prison, and you're dealing with racism that's completely unbelievable. And the guards are the worst, some of the lowest scums that I've ever met in my life. Paul Harvey once said, if you want to meet the lowest scums on earth, go to any prison in USA. The trick is you have to be at the gate at shift change. And he's absolutely right. I mean, there, if I was a murderous man, I would have already cut the throats of several of them now, because I was so angry when I got out of prison at these guards.
Yeah.
But I can deal with, I know how to deal with mine. I can deal with my anger. I can get it and put it behind me. But there are people who cannot.
Yeah.
And there are more people who cannot.
So in a so they're in an opportunity where they can inflict violence if they want to, because of a hate for a certain color of person.
Oh, absolutely. I've seen
have the authority. It's kind of like the high school kid who gets picked on, and now they're the kind of the boss, so to speak.
Yeah, pretty much now. And I had one particular guard who just had a hard on for me, and every week he was strip searching me, and I just started having to make fun of him, asking him, did you like looking at my bungholio every day? I ended up having to file sexual harassment charges on the cat to make him leave me alone.
Yeah.
But I was too close to getting out. Otherwise, I would have normally gotten shipped clean across the state for punishment of filing sexual harassment charges on a male guard.
Oh, yeah. And then you're talking about putting yourself in a situation for retribution for them.
Oh, absolutely.
Because that's a brethren in itself.
Oh, absolutely. So, you get these people that their minds are not right, that's been in there for 8, 10 plus years.
Yeah.
And you've treated them absolutely like crap. And they have so much anger built up inside them that one day you cut them loose.
Yeah.
And now you have this individual with all this internal flame raging out of control inside of him. And then one day he crosses the path of somebody who just crossed him wrong.
Yeah.
And then all that anger and all that, disappointment and hatred comes out.
Yeah.
And then there's innocent people, hurt, killed, whatever the case may be, and it all stems back to, regardless of whether he was guilty of what he done or not, regardless of he has served his time, and he has served his time in prison. But in prison, if you're going to brainwash the individual and make him nearly a lunatic killer, don't release him, keep him in prison forever, because he's only going to get out and he's only going to hurt more people. I say this because I've seen it.
Yeah,
I was the day there was a guy who left out of Gaston Correctional Center was so angry, and I spoke with him several times and took, I did a lot of walking. I probably walked 4,000 miles in prison. I walked every day for hours, just thinking about my counterattack on the justice system, and now I'm fulfilling those plans. But he would join me and we'd talk, and I'd talk to him about his stuff, and he'd been down for a long time, and I just knew. And one of the first words that come out of my mouth were, when you get out of here, you've got to change your path. Because if you don't, something bad's going to happen. I can just feel it. I can hear it in your voice. And it wasn't just a couple of weeks after he was released from Gaston. He had robbed, shot and killed a couple of people. And was being chased by some deputies, shot and killed a deputy before a few of them actually shot and killed him.
Yeah. It just goes in line with what's happening, back as far as America in the whole. It's a wedge issue, and race, it's one of the biggest ones. I mean, we're here in the South, we're right smack dab in the middle of it. You don't see this a lot when you go to the North. I've been out West, you don't see it a lot out there. There's not a lot of, whites and blacks at each other's throats, but for some reason in the South, I guess with our history, you do see a lot of it. And that was one of my questions for you too when we were talking about Obama in general. It's do you think race relations are better now, after 7 years of him being in office, or were they better, before he got into office, or about the same? I mean, what do you think?
Now, that I do have an opinion on, and my opinion is that I personally feel they were better before he took office.
Okay.
Because of what I see going on right now.
Yeah. It's funny, both of us, of course, were, remember 9/11, I'm sure. Anybody who was a teenager or above, probably has an opinion on 9/11. But I remember when 9/11 hit and happened, there was no white, there was no black, there was no Hispanic. There was no straight or gay. There was no male or female. It was America united as one. Now maybe that's a whole conspiracy talk in itself, if 9/11 happened and all that good stuff, but we're not going to go there today. But to see now, you have this individual who was put in office, and the one word, if I asked you, what would be the one word that you would have to describe Obama? Mine would be puppet. I don't think he's the ruler of this country. I don't think he's the leader of this country. I think he's being controlled by another group who's far more sinister than he could ever be. So this individual who's tried his whole life to find out who he really is, is in office, and he's a biracial, product of a biracial home. He had the ability, or he could have had the ability, we hoped he had the ability, one of his words that he used, to unify the American public. He's white mom, black dad, whatever it is, whatever the combination is, just so happens that's what it is. Come in and talk about that. Use that opportunity for race relations to make it better, not make it worse. And it's one wedge issue after another, and race being a huge part of it. I have a couple of friends, one of my good friends, Larry. So Larry, if you're out there listening, I'm going to give you a shout out and talk about a little bit of the conversation we had this morning. But we were talking, if I asked you the questions, even going back to prison now, if I asked you, are there more whites in prison or are there more blacks?
You asking me that?
I'm asking you that. What would you say?
The population where I was at?
Yeah.
I'm speaking strictly of the prisons that I was at.
Yeah.
There were a lot higher black people than there were whites.
Okay. Now, overall as a nation, and you would hear a lot of black individuals say, hey, there's more blacks in prison. Well, that's not true. But then again, you got to look at the statistics. See, the statistics don't lie. It's just a question of how you look at them. So there are more whites in prison than blacks across the nation. But then again, there's sheer volume of whites compared to blacks, and that's why.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we're talking about the percentage of blacks as opposed to the percentage of whites, there's a higher concentration of blacks as far as the percentage of their own demographics.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a product of the system? Is that a product of the environment? Or the culture that's going on in the black community? That's a lot of stuff to be debated. But at the same time, same thing with police violence. We see riots. We see Baltimore. We see St. Louis. We see the Trayvon Martins. We see the Michael Browns. We see the liberal media rush into these, instances where a black person was harmed by a white officer, unfortunately. And they use that wedge issue to anger and incite blacks against whites, or against the government in general. But the actual truth is there was more whites killed last year, almost double than there were blacks, by police.
Wow.
And the stats now are every 8 hours somebody's being murdered by a cop, that's the average civilian.
Are you sure about that? Because I think the numbers on the time frame is less than that. I say that because something's ringing a bell that I just seen, I think yesterday or the day before, that it's not even 8 hours.
Really?
A police officer is killing someone, whether they're white or black. And I think it said something about it. It was showing a pool of blood, and it says, who did this belong to, Latino, black, or white?
Exactly. And that's one of the and that's the thing we have to look past. I mean, if you're listening out there, we have to look past the wedge issues. It's not a white or black thing. And that's one thing we were talking about, my friend Larry and I, it's, the number one statistic out there as far as crime is black male on black male crime. The number one carrier of STDs, black males, the number one carrier of HIV is black males. Where's the Sharptons and Jesse Jacksons?
And you've researched this?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where are the Jesse Jacksons and Al Sharptons about this? And that's the thing is we have to look past the color. We have to find the root of the problem, and we have to change it, And it's not a white or black thing. This is a them versus us thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is the people versus the state thing, because they want us all fighting over the scraps.
Mm-hmm.
They want us all underprivileged. They don't want us to succeed in this, in this world out there. And that's probably one of the biggest conspiracies out there, is that they actually give a crap about us, and it's not. It's not out there. They don't.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come right back, and then we're going to finish up with Glenn. We've got about 10 minutes left in the show.
Suppose you were accused of a crime you did not commit. Now, how far would you go to prove you're innocent? Hi, my name's Luther Stidham. Want to help me right the wrong? Just pick up a copy of my book, Falsely Accused Forever Branded, at your favorite bookstore or on Amazon. Or better yet, make a donation of any amount at mofobooks.com. That's mofobooks.com.
All right, thanks for joining us. I want to tell everyone listening a personal thank you for donating an hour of your time to my show. It's very important to me. I'm not doing this to get any fame and fortune. I could care less. And to prove that, I'm paying for this whole thing. Not one person has given me a dime to do this. And I'm doing it to share my story. I'm doing it to enlighten the people. And just share the stories of other people who have suffered at the hands of a very corrupt government and justice system. And it's out there, man. It's, if you don't think it is, you know, I'm not going to sit here and name off people, but I've made contact with some very old friends, and listening to this person's story about someone very close to them, you know, it was so like deja vu. Like, wow, really? That, you know, that sounds just like mine. And I've heard that so many times of how prosecutors and attorneys, even as a cop, man, I'm telling you, as a police officer, first of all, my name's Luther, and I said that. As a police officer, I'm telling you that there are orchestrated convictions throughout Brunswick County. I'm telling you that again. My name's Luther, and I said that because I seen it. I witnessed it. I promise you, as sure as I'm breathing, I walked my little angry ass out of court one time on a domestic violence case, because that's something I'm against big time. That'll get me fired up real quick. And you can actually read about that in a particular section of my book called
Motivation. I was about to ask you, was that the part that was in the book about
Motivational Research? Yeah. I spanked that poor young guy.
That was a good part.
I spanked him bad.
Yeah, I kind of pumped my fist while I was on a train reading that.
Yeah, so... I spanked him quite bad, and I don't mean physically with a belt. You're just going to have to read the story to find out how. I can promise you one thing, at least while I was a Boiling Spring Lake police officer, he never put his hands on another woman again.
That's awesome.
I grant you that. Anyway.
Street justice.
Exactly, street justice. Sometimes the only way to get justice is through your own means. There's actually another saying to that, but I'm not going to say that. Anyway, I've witnessed as a cop orchestrated convictions. The deals are made. The judges are just puppets. You're talking about Obama being puppets. The judges are puppets. These district court and the superior court judges, they are puppets. And this is all, oh, you rub my back, I'll rub your back type of system. Do me this favor, listen. I'm Mr. Prosecutor, you know, hotshot over here, and I need this case, Jason. I need you to give me this case.
Okay.
And I'll give you the next case. I'll give you such and such case. I'll let that one be dismissed. But I want this guy.
Yeah,
and I'm telling you that happens. I'm telling you, I've seen it, I've heard it. It happens, and I was extremely shocked when I did.
Luther, do you think that the average person out there, it's kind of like meeting a celebrity? You know, we think that these people are above the law, so to speak, because they're a celebrity, because they can throw a ball 60 yards or sing a song. The same thing with judges. These people in power, they're average people, just like us. You know, we work in a business where, you know, I give you a good price on this and you give me more business, you know, this, stuff like that. I mean, when you pull back the celebrity status or the power status, isn't that just a hookup? You know, isn't that just kind of the way things go down? Pretty much, yeah. But we're talking, you know, people's lives here.
Right, exactly.
A lot more at stake.
Right. Yes, it is. It's the abuse of power. It's the, I've had the power, you know, I've been there. I mean, someone might say, Luke, you know, how bad you beat that guy that beat that little girl and his girlfriend.
Yeah.
You were abusing your power. Well, thank you very much. Please say it again, because I'd love to hear it.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. I admit that openly on the radio. I beat the snot out of him.
Yeah.
But it was justice that needed to happen.
Do you think police...
I knew damn well when I got to court.
Yeah.
it's something, it had been spanked on the butt, spanked on the hand, and it went on, because I seen it. I pulled up on a, as an example, before that, I pulled up on another domestic violence call, seeing both he and her beating each other.
Okay.
Hitting each other. It wasn't self-defense, because I took the time to watch as I was getting out of my patrol car. So I arrested both of them. And yeah, the law says I could. I took them both to jail. And when it come time for court, do you believe that the man got up here and said, you might as well dismiss the case, talking to the prosecutor, because I'm just going to say that she was defending herself, and she's standing right beside him, hugging on him. There's like lovey-dovey. And I told that prosecutor, I said, you better not.
Yeah.
And he said, that's my call, not yours.
Yeah.
I said, you haven't even asked me what happens. I'm the reporting officer. I saw what happened. He hit her. She hit him. It was back and forth. There were no self-defense. They were in a fight.
Well, but then again, that goes back to the over 90% of cases being plea bargain.
Yep.
So they're paying fees. They're both paying court costs. They're both paying lawyer fees. It's the whole system, once again, that prevails over, you know, what justice needs to be, you know, done.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So again, I say it in the book. I make no apologies for my action to Tim in motivational research. And if you want to know what I've done, you're going to have to read the book. You're going to have to read the book. Jason, we have got just about 5 more minutes here left. Anything you want to jump on real quick? And please, you're going to have to come back, man. This is really good.
Well,
there's 4 or 5 pages there still in front of you that we haven't gone over. So by all means, when we're done with the show, I'll book you for another one.
Cool. Hey, I want to give the people out there listening just a few topics. I know life is hectic. I know life is busy. But if you get a few minutes, I want you to do some research on this stuff. Turn off the Dancing with the Stars. You know, turn off the nonsense that they're trying to keep you occupied so you're not paying attention to what's truly going on. And I want you to do a few research on a few of these bullet points. And I'm just going to run them down. If you want me to stop, Luther, you tell me to stop.
Go right ahead.
But,
go ahead.
You know, just a few questions out for the people. But first of all, why aren't we being told about the bombings and ISIS attacks in Saudi Arabia right now? Saudi Arabia is on fire. Why are they not covered on American news? They're covering it on BBC. They're covering it on Middle Eastern, on the Al Jazeera's. And another thing with Iran, we're being told that Iran's such a horrible monster of a country, and they want to bomb Israel and knock them off the map. And there's been some things that have been said and done, but why are they not talking about that Iran is in 2 wars right now, and one of them's against ISIS? They're fighting.
Oh.
Iran is fighting ISIS right now as we speak, and they're not talking about it. They're talking about this nuclear deal. Remember, folks, you got to follow the money. You got to stop paying attention to what they're telling you on Fox News or on MSNBC. It's all fire starters on one side or the other to keep you fighting in the living room while nobody is guarding the kitchen. So, another one. Why do we have military bases in 74 countries around the world? You know, why do we have these bases in other countries, but the ones that we don't have, you know, bases in those countries or in big sectors of the continent, if you will, we consider them enemies. We don't have a base in Iran. We don't have a base in China or North Korea or Russia or anywhere close to those areas, you know, as far as on the Asia side. So, you know, I guess if they let us have a base there, they're our friend, and if not, they're our enemy. You got to do research on this stuff. GMOs, genetically modified foods, GMOs, Google it, study it, change your diet, change your buying habits. Why are they the norm here, but they're not allowed in most of the civilized world? They're not allowed in the UK. This is one of the things I noticed when I went over to the UK and spent a couple of weeks. You don't see a lot of obese people over there. You don't.
Right.
People
You're
are riding,
absolutely right.
People are riding bikes. People are running. People are walking. But you know, regardless, you know, it's like the women, Phil and I, if you're still listening to Phil, we're joking about, you know, the women. It's like, regardless if you thought they were attractive or not, you couldn't say that they weren't in shape.
Right.
You
right.
know, why is America so obese? Well, that's one of the things. You're eating fake foods that don't process, that don't get taken out of your body by the normal, you know, systems that we have, you know, in our body to do that. Jade Helm 15. Why are we not being shown videos of that? Why is the media not being allowed to show videos of Jade Helm? And I don't know, Luther, if you're familiar with the Jade Helm, but it's the largest domestic military exercise ever in the history of the United States. You know, now they're talking about a Jade Helm plan of course of action for North Carolina with the 3 people who just got arrested. you know, for bombs in, I think, Cleveland County or Gaston County. We're talking about that these people were preparing for a insurgence or a martial law. You know, do some research on this stuff, guys. The truth is out there. I mean, this isn't the X-Files, but, I mean, it really is out there. I mean, you're going to have to get off your butt, or while you're on your butt, turn off the dang TV and do some research on what's really going on.
Thank you, Jason, for joining us. This is Injustice Radio. I'm your host, Luther Stidham. And right quick, before we end the show, listen, I need your help. I really need your help. A lot of people need your help. I need you to go to my website, mofobooks.com. That's mofobooks.com. Sign my petition. It's incredibly important to sign my petition. I am waiting on as much support as I can get. I have to reach my goal of 100 signatures. And then the war begins.
Do it. And do it now.
Exactly. Thank you. And watch where this goes. I promise you, once this thing breaks the news, what I have revealed in my book, not about just my life as a police officer, but what we discovered in my case file, that the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation, Meredith Everhart, or former District Attorney Prosecutor Meredith Everhart, Superior Court Judge Ola Mae Lewis, and attorney Michael Ramos hid from the public's view will turn your stomach. You will probably even puke all over yourself when you read this. And everything I say in this book is backed up by the actual case files in the back of the book. And you, as well as I have the audio too, you want to get a shot of one of the discs that was located in the files. You can go to my Facebook page. Just go there and Google search my name. Now, as a disclosure, I do not access Facebook, so if any of the officer edge of my probation people listening, sorry, I do not access Facebook. I have administrators access it for me. I have several who do that, and I want to say thank you to Sean. I want to say thank you to John Bowens. He is one of them. And I want to say thank you to my sister, Denise. She does predominantly everything on my Facebook. So I don't access it, so sorry, so sad. I'm not breaking any rules. Anyway, thank you for joining us, and we're going to go to commercial break, and then going to jump right into the outro.
Thank you, Luther. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Suppose you were accused of a crime you did not commit. Now, how far would you go to prove you're innocent? Hi, my name's Luther Stidham. Want to help me right the wrong? Just pick up a copy of my book, Falsely Accused, Forever Branded, at your favorite bookstore or on Amazon. Or better yet, make a donation of any amount at mofobooks.com. That's mofobooks.com. Next week, and remember, America, this is your show.